Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. We know you've missed us. It's your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Guys, football is back, in case you didn't know. And BetOnline is your number one information source for all your sports wagering info with all the up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football right at your fingertips. With BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds from week one all the way to the college football playoff and Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your $50 welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. John, my first question, what is a mobile device if not a phone? That's never made sense to me.
Yeah, I guess you could walk around with a tablet. That's mobile. I don't know.
Palm Pilot?
Sure. Right. BlackBerry? Those exist?
Yeah. Okay. Hot start.
Brad, you know, I wanted to talk to you because since you left and had more fun than me the past couple weeks, how was your trip?
Trip was great. I went overseas across the pond to lovely London, and then a brief jaunt down to France. It was a lovely vacation. I think one of the funniest things I noticed, I did have some sports takeaways from the trip. So while I was in London, the first NFL game in London was taking place. It was Jags-Falcons. And I don't know if it's like the greatest marketing campaign, like flash mob type of deal, or if really the NFL is just as popular, but I saw so many random jerseys, random cool NFL jerseys.
Sure.
People walking together wearing Patriots gear and Giants gear and Vikings gear. I would say 10% at most speaking English. It was just a wild phenomenon. And I like to think that there's a marketing executive in the NFL head office that's like, we're going to just start sending jerseys to people. Doesn't matter who they are. Doesn't matter where they live. And we're just going to send them jerseys and tickets. We're going to hope they show up and walk around the city. And if that marketing executive exists and is listening to this show, kudos to you, because what you were doing worked big time.
Can we rewind? You said you were in England, where I gotta believe English was originated. And you said 10% of the people were speaking that language?
Tops. Wow. It seemed to me, honestly, well, that were of the NFL wearing population.
Okay.
Now, what I will say, still very strange, but I will also say that you look at the pie chart, NFL teams, Jags making up a big slice of that pie. Outsized number of Jags gear, and not surprisingly, if you drill into that slice of the pie, much higher English speaking percentage of that specific slice of the pie than any of the others.
You know, Jacksonville, I can imagine, resonates as a city with a lot of like the not nicer parts of London. Like, I can see there being a nice little crossover there.
Yeah.
Just like kind of like the, I don't know, just the Jacksonville to me is just kind of a little bit of an armpit. And I can see, like, I don't know. It makes sense to me is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the fact that they are so heavily represented there is very funny to me, that that was the org that they're like, you know who we're going to continue to just send to London year after year? The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Who's going to fight us? Like, you know, like no one's going to get mad about that. Hey, who, do you think that because Michigan State has a head coach position open, in what world can we, is there an idea here where we could hire an EPL manager?
Listen, to
reverse Ted Lasso this thing?
If anybody could do it, it would be Pep. For those of you who are you uneducated swine, Pep Guardiola is Man City's manager. Probably the GOAT. Yeah, I say we try, right? Like,
make him say no. Make him say no.
Make him say no. Yeah, I'd say we go for it, man. I love the idea. Or just hire Jason Sudeikis. At this point, with some of the candidates that get thrown out there, he might as well just coach the team.
Just read the speeches from here. Like, you don't even have to coach. Just take the scripts.
Just tape Believe above every door and don't even hire a coach.
Incredible. Do you want to talk about our hot board?
Yeah, I think we should, because the last time we talked was, you know, kind of fresh on the heels of all of the insanity that struck. And it didn't really feel like a super appropriate time to start talking candidates. But guess what? It does now.
Wait, two weeks ago, Austin, an actual candidate, like there was conversation about like Mark D'Antonio coming back and coaching the team again. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No.
People were like not opposed to it for a minute.
Yeah, that's called shock. That's called dealing
early stage.
The early stages of I don't know. Yeah, just coping with what's going on at your university. Oh. But I mean, John, should we address the elephant in the room first and foremost so we can get on with the actual names?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. So the elephant in the room is that there have been reports. I almost feel bad calling them reports because they're not
single report.
One reports from an account that may or may not be intentionally lists the fact that they are propaganda in their handle more than anything else.
No.
But he's not helping. But we love him, but he's not helping. A lot of people are saying Urban Meyer, and I just cannot believe that the amount of traction that this idea has gotten. And it almost feels like one of those things that started as a joke and then got serious and is now back to a joke again. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that it's returned back to a joke, because while on the field as a football coach, as a collegiate football coach, one of the best to ever do it. Like, make absolutely no mistake.
Sure.
I think even professionally in his time at, you know, with those Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we go. A little through line. I don't even necessarily think that would hold me back from hiring him as a collegiate head coach again. I really don't. Because, I mean, go down the list. There's been plenty of guys. Bill.
Save.
Yeah. It's the only example you ever really need to give. But plenty of guys have gone to the NFL. Bill O'Brien came back to college football, didn't he? No, maybe he went the other way. He went the other way. Whatever. Either way. That wouldn't necessarily stop me. What's going to stop me, Matt Rhule, what's going to stop me is that he has, by all accounts, is not a great guy.
I'll stop. Well, I'm going to counter argument. Not a lot of college football coaches are. Continue.
Now that's fair. however, when you're looking at what Michigan State wants, what they should be looking for, and by all indications are looking for, it does not fit what Urban Meyer is. What he has done off the field, very publicly, not great looking. The way he's treated people within the facilities, dating back to Florida, not always the best. Again, some of that's noise. Some of that happens in every football building. But there are just too many things about Urban Meyer that are too public and too close to home from, you know, what's happened with Michigan State here in the past, that I think anybody with any type of character red flag is or should be kind of automatically disqualified. So while you love to dream and think, oh my God, Urban Meyer, wouldn't that be fun? Amazing. What a great coach, all that. it just doesn't, it's just not going to happen. So it's better if you have the tinfoil hat on still to just go ahead and take that off, put it down until we need it for something else.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do like the sentiment that our fan base has had, like, just kind of a little bit fed up. And that's like, this is totally a repercussion, and not surprising one, where, you know, oh, we do want to win, right? Like, that's what separates us from other programs, even in the Big Ten. Like, we have a large fan base that very much cares, and we haven't quite gotten to the level of we will do anything to win, like SEC style, but this opportunity, you know, prompted a knocking at the door, and I just don't think we have it in us, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm proud of that, and we're not there, and he is a great coach. I think there are a lot of great coaches. And one thing to consider is, it's not to say he couldn't be great or good or at this, but he has not been a part of this new age of college football, which is a lot different than when he was here. I mean, the portal itself is not something you get great. I mean, it's tough. It's new. It's different. So he could be great at it. I don't know.
The portal and NIL completely changed the job. I mean, the point of the matter is that's been around for 3 years. No one's resume with it is all that long. So it's hard but we do know those. I think those that have struggled with it more are those that have been around for longer. That's not a coincidence, I don't think. That's not a surprising thing. That's a whole element, even this in this fictitious world where he's even a legitimate candidate, that would kind of disqualify him in a way. I want to hit on something you said, because I think it's a really good observation. If you think back to when Michigan State was looking for a head coach and that search ended in Mark D'Antonio, like, I don't even think it's fair to look at the D'Antonio to Tucker search, because it was just done under such impossible circumstances. It wasn't even really much of a search. And so to look back at the last time Michigan State had a real live actual head coach search, I don't remember, at least, the clamoring for the big name or the sensation of being, like you said, John, fed up. I think everyone was kind of done with John L. just because he was the show was so messy, and people were just ready for something new. But people weren't saying, "Oh, we got to go get
big fish,
that's the brightest thing out there," because that fan base at that time, of which we were both a part, wasn't like, they didn't have the recent history of being good for a long period of time.
It didn't have the money.
Didn't have the money.
Right. And now we do.
Now we do. And we have, we feel a little entitled. We consider ourselves as we should be in this specific echelon.
I think that's okay, because there's a model, there's proof of concept. Like, it's 100%. Possible. And that's why we feel a little entitled, is like, listen, maybe it was a dream back in the aughts, in the 90s, that we could be a top 20 program year in and year out. It's a reality now. We've seen it. And now we have even more resources at our disposal. Like, why not? And I think one thing to consider, Austin, is, X's and O's, wins and losses are a mandatory on the resume. But one thing I don't think a lot of people are talking about, and I think is maybe one of, if not the most important part of the job interview, is proof and experience of fundraising beyond the school's expectations in the past, and rallying donors together so that you could find a unified NIL or streamlined NIL concept. If you've done that elsewhere, I'm already listening. Because you've seen it here, we have it's everywhere. You have fractured fan bases, fundraising going to many different areas. You're not really sure how it's working. If a head coach could come in and CEO the hell out of that, I think you're going to see a really amazing candidate. I don't know who that is. I'm just saying that's got to be a huge part of the interview.
Yeah, I think really, so as we kind of pivot to who actual candidates might be, if you think about the archetype, it really is Mark D'Antonio. It sounds so cliche, colloquial, like, oh, remember the good times. But in reality, Michigan State should be looking for somebody who is in a very similar situation, represents a lot of the same things that Mark D'Antonio did when he was hired at Michigan State. There are some things about it that I don't necessarily think are as important per se. When you think about who D'Antonio was when they hired him, right? He was a hotshot coordinator for a national championship team. Now, I'm not saying whoever this person is has to fit all these criteria. It's tough to be that coordinator for a national champion, right? There's only so many of them. But was a big-time coordinator, went and got a solid job at the time, Cincinnati. Again, now certainly a bigger stage than it was, but yeah. A job, had it for 4 years, consistently.
Followed some big footsteps. He followed two guys that got out. So that program was good, Brian Kelly and Butch Jones.
Well, they followed him.
Oh, I'm sorry. Other way. Was it? Are you sure?
Yeah, they followed him. D'Antonio went to Michigan State. Brian Kelly went there the next year, and then Butch Jones followed him from Central the year after
so
that.
You're right. So, I mean, he started.
He made it a job that people wanted.
That's cool. Good for him. Even though he went 18-17, which is was a big. I remember people pointing at that and saying, "Are we sure?" But it was.
Yeah.
There were good reasons to hire him.
But it was more about the fact that, like, what did he bring to Michigan State?
Mm-hmm.
He brought sanity. He brought identity. He brought a program. He brought a unity. He brought a mission, and just like leveled everything out. Mm-hmm. The Michigan State was a crazy place for those people that don't remember it. Like John L. It was just like insanity all the time. The teams were so, honestly, on the field in a lot of ways, the product we were watching now is not all that dissimilar. Like just very. True. Very undisciplined, flashes of brilliance, flashes of what is going on out there. No, I mean, the press conferences were much more entertaining than the ones we've seen actually, because he slapped himself like that. But just craziness. There was no adult in the room. And it feels like that is kind of the point that we're at right now too.
With talent. That's the most frustrating part. Like with talent. John L. lost with talent at certain positions, and you're like, what the hell? You see a lot of it here, not across the board, but like the same kind of pops in talent, and you're like, how are we not doing more with this? Like, this is ridiculous. And so I think you're right. There is a proven proof of concept, and you know, the names that are on that list are names that I think everyone on this podcast listeners would have heard of, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So we have our little list, but then we have different names for fun. Which one do you want to do?
Let's do the funny ones first so people can get mad before we give actual ones.
Okay. Well, we already did Urban Meyer, which at hand up, been a part of doing a bit that became very serious. I get it. It happens when your bit becomes real life. One name that really bothered me was Pat Shurmur.
Oh God.
I read that from Rittenberg. He like put that in his article, and I got up at work and took a walk. I was like, if that happened, this could become a basketball podcast. Like, I just don't know.
The names that fall into that bucket for me are essentially any. Like, to me, that's either means two things. Either he was just being lazy, like Rittenberg was just being lazy and throwing a name out there, which I doubt is the case because he's a very good journalist. But or he knows his agent, which I think is probably the and they just want to throw the name out there. Pat Shurmur was an NFL head coach who failed and a position coach who failed. And now he's an analyst at Colorado. Like, that's I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the guy I want to put in charge of my team. Like, talk about having no juice at all. Like, that's just
juiceless.
The lamest hire. So there's that one. It's just like a tangential person who was once attached to the university. And now the other ones are like the old position coaches or head coaches from the D'Antonio days. Chief among them being Pat Narduzzi. Like, respect to Pat. He's been at, you know, Pitt for, gosh, probably close to 10 years now.
And he's on the hot seat, man.
What's that?
He's on the hot seat.
Yeah, they're not good. They've never been very good.
They're 1-4. Keep going. Sorry.
No, just I don't think, you know, that's a fun name 10 years ago. It's not a particularly successful football coach name at this point in time. I'm sorry. I'm not moved by him. Talk about talking to donors and all, and, you know, getting, you know, doing NIL. I mean, he lost Jordan Addison and complained to high heaven. And then, you know, I don't think he's probably ever enjoyed a donor dinner. So I don't think that's the guy you want to put in charge. I mean, you've seen, I saw somebody float Dan Enos and I almost threw my computer window. Any of those ones I think are sort of lazy and I don't feel like are actual good football hires.
It's cool that you can just say anything on the internet.
Yeah.
So let's get into those. Aren't funny names. Those were mad names. The funny names, I keep getting pushback. I'm going to keep saying it. Lane Kiffin. And here's why. I know we just talked about like controversy, but I don't think he's ever gotten in like legal trouble. Like he's just been he's just been on everyone's radar for years and he's just pushes the limit. Right. But what he also does now is he wins. Mm-hmm. Like, he wins at places that you don't win at. He was banished to the hell rings of college of football period. And he has come back. And he has brought, if you go look at Ole Miss's, first go look at Florida Atlantic's win-loss records before and after he was there.
Oh, yeah.
Then go to Ole Miss's. People have this weird, like, misconception of Ole Miss and Mississippi State football. It's terrible. In fact, it's like the worst in the SEC over time. So go look at the win-loss records. He won for the first time the most games in school history or something last year. It was like 10. It's astonishing what he's done there. And he's trying to get in Saban's head, as you've seen. And I think we all know he's been kind of wanting the Bama job when Saban leaves. But he's been at Mississippi for 4 years, and that's as long as he's ever been literally anywhere in his life. So he's itching to leave. And
He's got tons of talent there too. Like talk about a guy who has embraced NIL and gotten the donors moving. Like
that's what I mean. And I think what we were talking about beforehand is like, we don't have to dip down and grab an ACC or a Pac-12 or Big 12 coach. They're certainly possible and it certainly could be a great hire. I just think we have almost as a like fan base ruled out the idea that someone could make a lateral move. And it's possible. And maybe Lane Kiffin isn't the guy because his salary is something like $9 million or something like that. But on the flip side, like I think Sheehan pulling it out to us. He's like, you know how much you can get paid here for one good season? Like we literally paid a guy $9.5 million with a checkered background check and gave him a 10 years on it. Like we'll pay. So I don't know. It's possible.
Money is not the issue. The appetite is not the issue. I think with Lane, as with any of these, like call it funny opportunity, like I think they're looking for a very almost milquetoast type of like hire. I don't know what they're looking for. I think I know actually, but I would love it to be Lane. If you're looking for like, if MSU was in a little bit more stable position or was like able to take on somebody that was like brash, I'd love to have Lane Kiffin. But yeah, I don't know.
All right, do yours. You had a good one.
Your
lateral move guy.
My lateral move guy, I think is
One that people might not be that super familiar with, but he's done a pretty good job. That's Eli Drinkwitz from Missouri.
Wins.
He's got Mizzou. Again, their wins are not super impressive, but they just lost LSU last week too. But he's sitting there at 5-1 in the SEC. Made a bowl game last year with Mizzou going 6-6. The guy, again, 6 wins at Missouri in the SEC is not something that people should, like, just overlook. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. And he did it last year, and he did it the year before as well. He's beaten South Carolina 2 years in a row, beat Florida 2 years ago. I mean, they've done some things at a place that's, ever since it's moved to the SEC, has been a very difficult place to do anything. And really, even more than that, he can recruit. If you look at the classes that he's put together at Mizzou and the ones he's got coming up, it's a pretty impressive group. And it's headlined by Luther Burden III, who is, this year through 6 games, has 54 catches, 793 yards, and 5 touchdowns. He's just a freak, man. Legitimate cross-the-board 5-star. Has 1 game under 100 yards, and that was at 97 catches for 96 against South Dakota. His last 3 games, I'm just going to read his stat lines. Against LSU, 11 for 149. At Vanderbilt, 11 for 140 and 2 touchdowns. Against Memphis, 7 for 177 and 177. Home against Kansas State, number 15 in a win, 7 for 114 and 2 touchdowns. Previous to that, Middle Tennessee State, 8 for 117. Like, dude just is a stud. And so I don't know, like, again, it's an SEC job, you know, so there is some inherent advantage there. But at the same point in time, it's the only, you have a better program than one team in your division, and Texas and Oklahoma are coming. So you're above Vandy. Aside from that, your division, which you can make a, is probably the worst division, still has Georgia, Kentucky, Florida, Tennessee, and South Carolina in it.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know what you do with that to get out of that meat grinder. I do wonder if he would take a look.
I don't know. I mean, yes, but then it's like, you know, Big Ten's going to be no cakewalk here.
That's true. And
I wonder if one other name I'll throw out, that a guy who might just be done with, he raised the program to a new height, and he maybe sees there is a ceiling on it, and he maybe finally saw it for the first time, and it was confirmed last week. It's Mark Stoops at Kentucky. Mm. He has brought that. I don't think people realize how bad Kentucky was. Oh. Like, they were like Vanderbilt bad for a very long time. And I've always thought that he's kind of been biding his time for the Iowa job until Kirk leaves, because they'll pay you $1 million a win there.
Oh, like, yeah.
They don't care. They'll pay you $7 million a year, get 7 wins, chilling. Like, that's everyone's happy, right? And $7 million in Iowa City is a long, well, go a long way, man. So I don't know if Stoops, like, we know Stoops can recruit. He's always taken our guys. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like he is also a kind of guy that could fit.
I've got one more.
Okay.
And that's, debate it all you want, but Kalen DeBoer from Washington,
okay,
I think is a legitimate one. Now, that's, that you could actually make a very real argument as a step down in terms of job, because the way he has Washington looking right now, it's hard to picture him leaving. However, and they are coming to the Big Ten. However, Michigan State's got a lot of resources. Michigan State doesn't have to, you know, they can recruit from all over the country. Not that Washington can't, but convincing a kid to go to school in Washington is about as remote as it gets, even if you're playing in Big Ten country. That's the location factor there is huge. Yeah, you're on the West Coast, but imagine what's a flight from Portland to Seattle is still a couple hours. Like, you know, nothing's really all that close. So I do wonder if at some point he looks around, and says, hey, I just beat that team really badly twice. I should go make that program a lot better. And maybe does that. So he'd be one of my first calls. If you're talking about wanting to go elephant hunting and you're in Michigan State, if you're the head coaching search party here, he'd probably be in my number one call. If I'm going elephant hunting, he coached at Indiana, so he knows the Midwest. I mean, guy's done nothing but great stuff since he went to Washington. So, I think that's another great one. But I don't know if it's in the land of possibility or reality. There are some names that I think are that, quite honestly, would really, really, should really, really get Michigan State fans excited. And I think there's really four that you and I have sort of honed in on.
Yeah. Before we go those quickly, DeBoer is only making like $3.3 million this year.
Right. Exactly.
And they're going to, obviously give him a huge raise. But what is a huge raise with the base salary of 3.3? Like, for context, Mel was making 5.9 in 2020.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference in program money, right? So I think that's just worth pointing out. But yes, we are believers in Mike Elko and Charles Huff, Jake Dicker, and Jonathan Smith. Is there anyone you want to focus on more than any others?
I actually think the inverse order there. Well, actually, I don't know. I think you can almost bucket like Dickert and Smith together. I mean, that's the Washington State and Oregon State head coaches, respectively. I think the theme between these four is that these are guys from lower tier programs. Elko from Duke, Huff from Marshall, Dickert from Washington State, Smith from Oregon State, that have succeeded at a lower level with pretty outstanding results kind of across the board. Like I said, I think you can bucket Dickert and Smith together because they present they have similar drawbacks, but they likely have similar motivations. They're both West Coast guys kind of through and through from what I understand. They've won at programs that are really difficult to win at with any type of consistency. Both of them have utilized the transfer portal tremendously over the last few years. And they're both sitting currently without a conference beyond 2024. So you have to think that they're potentially very motivated to move and thus would maybe take less money or be a little bit more motivated to look for an interview. So I would expect both of them to be candidates for a multitude of jobs. I think they're both legitimate candidates for Northwestern as well. And I think there's probably many others that will open up over the course of the next 4 months, 3 months that they will be in the running for. Next up is Huff. I would put him probably as my second right now. He doesn't have as long a track record. I suppose Dickert's is pretty short. And Smith's is a handful of years longer, but Huff has been everywhere. If you look at kind of the modern day prototype for an up and coming head coach, I think Huff is almost a perfect fit. He's been at Penn State, Mississippi State, Alabama. He was an associate head coach. And if you look at, I think we mentioned this last time, the kids he's recruited to these schools, they are big time.
That's the big one for me.
Very, like, very big time.
It's so like, and we can point at Dicker and DeBoer, but if you go and see, they're not pulling dudes. Like the dudes at Washington,
yeah,
like the three NFL dudes and Penix, like Penix was, a high three star that we know all that story. The three NFL dudes, I think they were Jimmy Lake height?
Yeah.
As bad of a coach as he was, could recruit the hell out of guys. So there's just that factor here. And like Mel Tucker talked a lot of game about recruiting and ultimately didn't necessarily get it done. Elko has a better, for what it's worth, track record with high end recruits than Mel Tucker. So I know we didn't get to him yet, but I think Huff is also maybe in that tier A recruiter level. And I think that's also a mandatory.
Yeah. I mean, he has landed a significant amount of five-star recruits in his days. Names that I'll run off that people know about: J.C. Latham, five-star offensive tackle at Bama; Dallas Turner, five-star edge at Bama, who's probably going to be a first-round pick this year; Chris Braswell, same deal at Bama; Damon Payne, defensive lineman at Bama. Miles Sanders, current starting running back for the Carolina Panthers. Ja'Cory Brooks was a five-star receiver to Bama. And finally, Ricky Slade, who's an all-purpose back, who he recruited once upon a time as well. And the list of four stars is extremely long. He's only been the head coach, I believe, this is only his second year, if I remember correctly. But if you look at his records last year, team went 9-4, including going on the road and beating Notre Dame, and then, you know, beating a Georgia Southern team that beat Wisconsin last year. Excuse me, a Georgia State team that beat Wisconsin last year. They beat Appalachian State last year. And then this year, his team is sitting at 4-1, just lost by a touchdown at NC State, beat Virginia Tech, beat Old Dominion, beat East Carolina. And while that isn't exactly a murderer's row, those are rock solid programs in his conference. And, you know, you have to just say he's won and he's recruited at the highest level. He swims in those circles. He's a young man. I think he's only 40, 41 years old. So, you know, that could be a potentially fantastic hire, and somebody that's very attuned to the modern demands of head coaching.
I love it. And then, you know, everyone's been talking about Elko, and taking someone from Duke would make a lot of people happy, I think. So also has the chops. He's winning with dudes at Duke and they have no talent, none.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to look at stars, like, certainly, Riley Leonard is an absolute stud and probably should have been, you know, rated higher. But he's winning with a lot of guys who are going to be accountants. And, like, that's pretty incredible. So
it is incredible. It is incredible. They almost beat Notre Dame this past weekend. Beat Clemson first week of the year. And this is coming on the heels, you know, of a season where they went 8-4. You know, they beat 9-4, excuse me, UCF in their bowl game, beat Miami last year, you know, had a very good season. So Elko, I think one of the other things that he brings to the table is, again, his recruiting. That Duke utilized the portal quite a bit, actually, despite probably not spending a whole lot of money, utilized the portal pretty well. And he has a background at Texas A&M. He was there. He knows what big programs, how they operate. He knows what they look like. If you can turn around Duke in a short period of time, you got my attention. So I really think that Elko and Huff probably, to me, stand out as options 1 and 2. I think Dickert and Smith are not too far behind because we've seen them do things really, really well. But there's some other names, you know, that'll eventually, I'm sure, come out of the woodwork and become hot. I think the theme you're seeing with these four, in addition to kind of winning at the lower level, is that they've all been head coaches. Uh-huh. I think a lot of the time, you know, a school in Michigan State's position would consider, you know, if you take in the position that they're looking for a new head coach for the long term. Under normal circumstances where all that happened was, hey, the coach didn't win, you fired him, so be it. I think coordinators would be very much on the table here. I think Jim Leonard would be a name that you'd be hearing a lot more about in particular. But given everything else that's going on at the university, I think Michigan State just needs that stable hand, someone who's done it before, who's going to come in like Mark D'Antonio did once upon a time and just stabilize things. Get Michigan State back to being an 8-9 win team that plays a certain style of ball, is well coached, and has an identity. Because right now, even under Tucker, like coming into this year, legitimate question was, what is Michigan State's identity? Because it was different from drive to drive, it seemed like.
Yep.
And the identity was really just chaos. And so that is not a way to be successful in college football. And so hopefully whomever they bring in has that as maybe their greatest strength, is the ability to establish an identity with the program and university.
I like it. And I've seen some pushback from people saying, like, we should aim higher than 8, you know, win seasons, 9 win seasons. And, you know, while I agree, I think you need to take a reality check, because the Big Ten is adding 4 premier programs. Playoff teams starting next year will probably have 9-3 teams in them. Like, that's with a 12-team playoff, the last team at large team in is probably going to be 9-3 from either the Big Ten or the SEC. So it's not a big deal to have an 8 or 9 win season. That can get you pretty far depending on who you beat and who you lost to.
Yeah. You just got to get back to sanity. That's the bottom line. And it's not to say that, I'll put it this way. It's really hard to skip that step. If you're trying to build a program, you don't see teams come from these everything, you know, the house is on fire type of situations to just, oh, guess what? We're good again the next year. Now, like a much more drastic example of this is Penn State. Penn State went through crazy sanctions and then just kind of got back to being good. And then Franklin took them to another level. That's how you have to look at it. It's not an overnight success. In a way, I think this is Michigan State fans being spoiled by what we saw a couple of years ago with an 11-win season out of nowhere. That's the aberration. That's not what you can expect, nor is it what you should expect. Look at Michigan. I mean, Michigan went from just a disastrous 10-year stretch. It's really incredible to look back. They won 3 and 4 games in a season like multiple times throughout a 5 or 6 year stretch. They were as bad as it got in college football for the major programs. And then they hired Jim Harbaugh. He came in, stabilized them at probably like 9-ish wins. And then after time, built a true winner back up. This is what happens. That's how it works. So if you think, oh, we should be better, we should be back in this conversation, to your point, John, that conversation is getting wider. So you don't have to be as great to get into it, theoretically, in the future. But also, you know, it's got to be a gradual build. Mark D'Antonio, again, perfect example. He did the same thing. He took it from chaos to order, and then order became greatness. And that's how Michigan State has to approach this build.
Well, there are guys there that can do it. So we'll sit tight. It's unfortunately, we're going to have to be waiting for a few more weeks and probably have to watch some bad football in between. But, you know, at least hot boards are pretty fun. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, it's more fun. I think it's more fun than the actual games.
100%. I'd like to sim through the season. But the rest of the country has some fun games going on. We can go through a couple of them. Georgia beat the hell out of Kentucky 51-13, as we discussed. For me, it's that Georgia figured it out. And you now have a team knocking on the door of being good.
Yeah, I think this is the this is what we've been waiting for, right? Like, I know Kentucky is what they are. You know, it's not this juggernaut of a program. But I think what you saw from Carson Beck, if you're a Georgia fan, is probably the most encouraging thing. 28-35, 389 and 4 touchdowns. Brock Bowers back to being an absolute beast. You know, a welcome sight for Georgia. And I think still has to be the odds-on favorite to go back-to-back-to-back.
Which is insane.
Absolutely insane. Underrated. Like, people are just kind of glazing over it.
Red River Shootout lived up to the billing. Dylan Gabriel, the legendary drive to win. I got to think this is the game of the year candidate, with the Sooners winning 34-30. This is a team that lost 49-0 in this very game last year. So, I don't know. Venables has got them going, man.
Yeah. Credit to, again, Brent Venables. Hired last year, didn't go great. Second year, doing better. It's got to build. But yeah, credit to Dylan Gabriel, man. Guy's been playing college football for the better part of a decade, and you know, he's overcome a lot of injuries. But this had to feel pretty good. I hope we get a rematch, man. I hope there's a rematch in the Big 12 championship game.
I'm pretty sure there will be. USC escapes against Arizona 43-41 in a triple overtime. Arizona's freshman quarterback Fifita, his first start, has 5 touchdowns. That's a problem for Alex Grinch, who is single-handedly holding USC back from being a national championship contender. Caleb Williams no-showed, and people are starting to wonder if USC is a pretender.
I got to know what Alex Grinch has on Lincoln Riley. I have to know. Just release the tape. Release whatever it is. We'll all get over it. and you can hire a new defensive coordinator, Lincoln. Like, just rip the Band-Aid off, man. This is like 10 years of awful defense for no real reason. Yeah, Caleb no showing is not great for them. But this defense stinks. This defense, as soon as they play real teams, is going to get shredded. They will lose multiple games. If you look at their last six games, has got to be up there with the most difficult in the country. They're at Notre Dame this weekend, home against Utah, at Cal, home against Washington, at Oregon, home against UCLA. That's five top 20 teams. In a lot, I mean, especially those last three, Washington, Oregon, UCLA, that's a lot of offense on those three teams. So you might be 9-0 going in and lose your last three games. So, yeah, I don't know. That's
crazy. Moving on, Alabama up, takes down Texas A&M 26-20 in College Station. Don't look now, but Alabama, that's a CFP team. Look at the schedule. I don't see them losing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same thing that happens every year. Their only losses to Texas, whose only loss is to Oklahoma. Like, Bama will be it's as good a loss as there is. They're going to be in the conversation up until the very end.
Losing at home is bad, though, I will say.
That's true. Still Bama. They win the SEC, they're getting in. They might even get in as a two-loss team, because I don't know who's going for that number four spot right now. There's a lot of – it's wide open.
Here's one to consider. North Carolina, 600 yards of offense against Syracuse, 40-7 win. Drake May keeps him in any game, so they're knocking on the door. And they got Tez Walker back.
Yes, and that honestly could be the thing that separates them. The fact that they stayed undefeated without him is great, because now they got back what should be their best, honestly, their best offensive weapon, period. They managed to survive what's actually like sneaky, not an easy slate of games. The meat of their schedule kind of coming up, though. I mean, the biggest games right now, they go into, they're hosting Duke and playing at Clemson and then NC State at the end of the year. So they've got some tricky ones still. But yeah, North Carolina, like you said, Drake May is going to keep them in any game. That dude's a baller.
Last game we'll look at is Georgia Tech takes down Miami in the single greatest blunder I've ever seen in college football. Truly, never seen a collapse like this. If you missed it, Miami had the ball. All they had to do was kneel. They chose to run a play instead. The kid fumbled. Georgia Tech gets the ball. They had 75 yards of passing offense through the game to that point, and in two passes went 75 yards and scored. It feels like Mario Cristobal did something very wrong, and this was karmic. I don't know how else to describe.
Yeah, like the monkey paw curled for him before this game. I swear to you, if this wasn't Miami, if they hadn't just spent all this money on Mario Cristobal, people would be talking about him getting fired, because that's
they are now. People are talking about it. I mean, it's inexcusable.
Well, the fact the game was even close against Georgia Tech is what people are really glossing over. Georgia Tech, a team that lost last week at home to Bowling Green, 38-27.
Oh my God.
Green.
People
Bowling
forget.
Bowling Green, who is 2-3, lost 38-7 to Ohio and got shut out against Miami, Ohio, 27-0. Beat Georgia Tech 38-27. And that same Georgia Tech team went on the road and beat Miami. I don't know, man. I do.
That's bad news. Bad news, Nebraska went to Illinois and had decided to play a football game. I get so jealous watching these games, because I'm like, man, why isn't Michigan State in the Big Ten West? We'd belong there this year with how bad we are.
Yeah, we would fit in very well historically to the Big Ten West with the current team we're trotting out there. But I don't know, man. Being a Nebraska fan must be such a bummer.
They won.
I know, but still, he scored 20 points against.
Imagine being an Illinois fan.
Yeah, but they don't care. I think it's just bliss for Illinois. They're like, well, we had one year, it was fun, and we won seven games. Like,
I know, that's the
good for a generation.
That's bad. Michigan beat Minnesota 52-10. Michigan is close to being good. Minnesota, terrible. They losing to Northwestern. losing by 42 at home. It's bad.
Yeah, I can't possibly move Michigan to the good tier until they play a remotely good team.
Okay.
Like, I need to see them on one hand, they do what you're supposed to do to bad teams, consistent, uh-huh. in making it boring. But on the other hand, they haven't played anybody that's anything better than very bad. Eastern Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, Rutgers, Nebraska, and Minnesota. Like, that is about as lame a schedule as you can get. And it's not going to get any better. They're home against Indiana, they go to Michigan State, and then they go to and then they play Purdue at home. Like, they're going to be the easiest 9-0 they've ever been. And then they go to Penn State, go to Maryland, and host Ohio State. They could easily go undefeated. But until they go and beat Penn State, you can't possibly say that they can't. You can't move them into the category of good because they have not played anybody that's remotely good.
It's true. If Michigan State is the best team you've played through 9 games, there's a problem.
And that's where they're going to be.
I know.
Games. It's very bad.
Ohio State takes down Maryland 37-17. It is October and Maryland has arrived on schedule.
Yes, indeed. It is the pumpkin or the glass slipper turning back into the pumpkin, whatever the hell happens in that. We have officially arrived. Marvin Harrison continuing to be a freak. 8 catches, 163 and a tutty. Yeah, Ohio State starting to figure it out a little bit here on offense after a close shave there against Notre Dame. So we'll see. That's another team. They have Purdue next week and then Penn State in 2 weeks. I think we learn a lot about who the real contender for the Big Ten is in that game.
Rutgers head to Wisconsin. The Badgers win 24-13. Rutgers is getting half a grade better every season. Wisconsin is 2 games up, I think, on everyone in the West already, and they lost at Washington State. I'm just not totally blown away by the Badgers, but they're the best in the West.
They are. Rutgers is 4-2. Credit to Rutgers. I'm happy for them.
Northwestern squeaked out a win over Howard this past weekend, 23-20. Howard outgained the Wildcats. It's like, why can't we be in the West this year, man? Like, come on.
I don't know, man. I don't know. This is the question I've been asking myself for the last, whatever, it's like 15 years. Northwestern gave up 177 yards on the ground to Howard's running back. Good God. They're 3-3, though. I give Northwestern credit. They have won 3 games, which I don't think a lot of people thought was possible.
It's true, but whatever. Iowa beat Purdue 20-14. Iowa was like 5-1, and it's the worst 5-1 team in the history of college football. Their quarterback went 6 of 21 in this game, and they won. For what it's worth, Michigan State lost to that kid. Which sweet. Tells you what you need to know about Michigan State this year.
Sweet. That's sweet. Things are good. Things are fine.
Brian Ferentz, things aren't looking good, buddy. You're getting falling behind schedule here.
Yeah.
Quickly through some national games. Oregon at Washington is must-see TV. I think Panics and Washington win big in this one. But how do you feel with 3-point favorites here?
I don't know about win big. But yeah, like you said, this is a must see. I completely agree. Must see TV. I don't know how to feel, man. The Bo Nix element is really, this is really like the convergence of two very odd old talking points on this, like old bits that we've had of Bo Nix and Michael Penix colliding in a real game in Oregon and Washington. Like what?
All right, so I'd feel better if Washington did the thing. They're fine. I like them. I have no problem with them. Over-under is 67 in this one. What do you think?
I'm taking the over.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of points.
Not a lot. Tell me where the defense is. I wish Washington's defense actually isn't all that bad.
We talked about USC heading to Notre Dame, where the Irish are 2.5 points favorites. If they win again and their defense is awful, at what point do you make a move midseason? Because you can't waste Caleb Williams.
I mean, he's made it so far that it'll almost be. I mean, he came from Oklahoma to USC with Lincoln Riley. He's been around the block.
Yeah,
I don't think they're bailing on him mid-season, but you know, you might have a revolt in Southern California if you don't. But yeah, this was supposed to be this big, sexy game, but Notre Dame not holding up their end of the bargain here.
They could, you know, it would do a lot for the program if I think they won this one. But if they lose, you're looking at like 5-3, right? That's not great. Yeah.
And you're looking at a lot of questions about Marcus Freeman is what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe MSU should hire him, said Rico Beard. Michigan takes on Indiana, 34-point favorites. This is going to be bad.
Yeah, they're going to cover.
Ohio State at Purdue, 19-point favorites, but you mentioned Ohio State plays Penn State next week. Could this be an OAP game?
Purdue, I think if you asked any Ohio State fan, people would tell you Purdue is like the team that weirdly gives them fits every year, like Northwestern basketball for Michigan State.
It's true.
I could see it for sure.
Penn State, 42.5-point favorite versus UMass. This will be uglier than the Indiana-Michigan game.
Yeah, just throw it deep, baby. Go deep, Penn State. Just lob it up. Do the thing.
Illinois at Maryland. I feel like Maryland's a 14-point favorite, and that's not nearly enough.
This is the immovable object against the unstoppable force. October Maryland versus a bad Illinois team. I tend to agree, go with Maryland, but again, we're past September, so
I know
all bets are off.
And then the Big Ten West comes down to this already in week 7, Iowa at Wisconsin, 9.5-point favorite for the Badgers, opened as a 37.5 over under. It plummeted to a 34.5 in the last 48 hours.
I love it. Live with me. Light your wings on fire. Live with me and take the under.
It's insane. I take the Iowa under every week. It's undefeated for me. It's just they keep on giving. It's incredible. If Wisconsin wins, I think they're 3 games up on the everyone or something, and 2 games up on the Big Ten West with tiebreakers over the second place teams. So I had my boss was like, hey, you know, if they win, you know, should I go to the Big Ten championship game because, you know, it'll be the last one. And I was like, buddy, you better go for 2 reasons. Indianapolis is great, and you ain't ever going back. Like, I don't care if you have Luke Fickell. You guys, the free ride is over, Badgers. You don't get to just go to the championship every year anymore.
Yep. Just say welcome. Yeah, I agree. You just lock it in. Go to Indy, eat some horseradish, and enjoy the last time.
So Michigan State's program is in a place where they are 4.5-point underdogs to Rutgers, a team they've only lost to once in their entire history. An over-under of 39, looking at a 22-17 final. Got to think that there's going to be a change at quarterback with the idle week last week. What do you want to see in this one?
I want to see some life. I want to see some signs of life. Like that... I want to see some pride. I want to see. It's so weird. Like, we're sitting in what feels like this lost, gelatinous, like, bubbly, weird season spot. So I think really what you want to see from Michigan State for the remainder of the season is production from young players who could stick around and continue to be a part of this program. And I think that starts at the quarterback position. In all likelihood, Caden Hauser getting the start. A lot of fans have been clamoring for it. You're finally going to get it. I think he's had a bye week to prepare. And now's the time. And you just hope. I think it is important to kind of have this bit of like belief in the future that the guys you're watching will be a part of the team. Like, you just have to watch and cross your fingers that, you know, they want to stick around. But I'll say this about specifically the quarterback position. Tough to get a Power 5 starting job
Yep.
And you have one at a program like Michigan State, and you've got 2 years left after this one, to 3 years technically in terms of eligibility, to be the guy under a new head coach. This is, you know, if you want to put yourself in a position to keep that job and be the guy for the new coach, now is the best possible time to start putting good tape out there. So it's hard for me to expect, unless he comes out and lights the absolute world on fire, that Caden Hauser would be going anywhere no matter how he plays. Like, again, unless he turns into a, you know, an absolute supernova. So hopefully he can come out and just look confident, show us something, and give us some excitement and reason to believe for the future.
I mean, the good news is every single player on the roster can't quit. They need to get out good tape, like you're saying, yeah, if they want to play anywhere else. I mean, it is not a guarantee that you enter the portal that you get picked up, much less start at other programs. So everyone, you're going to see a unified effort. You're going to see effort, whether it's unified and put together is another thing, because we haven't seen much of that. The great news is they're playing a terrible quarterback.
Yes.
The bad news is Deacon Hill, Iowa's backup quarterback, came in and beat Michigan State. And he went 6 of 21 the next week against a not good Purdue defense. You know, it's the last bad quarterback you're going to play until your boy at Indiana. So this is it.
At that, you still got Minnesota and Nebraska on the schedule. So let's not go crazy there. But here's the bottom line. Is that if Michigan State wants to make a bowl game, they have to win this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you look at Michigan State's seven remaining games, three of them are against Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan. Listen, anything's possible. Currently, all three of those are slated to be played at night. One of them on the road at Ohio State. I'm not sure I see any wins coming out of those three. So you only have two wins right now. For all intents, you got to get to six, really. So you got to beat Rutgers, you got to beat Minnesota, beat Nebraska, beat Indiana. Literally, your season, you're 6 weeks in, and your season could end today. So,
well, it's the team to play.
Sure is.
They're better than, you know, Rutgers of the past, but still the team to play. You know this, and you know, you got to. Michigan State was, despite how terrible it looked right there against Iowa, they just couldn't make enough winning plays. I think Rutgers is worse than Iowa. If, you know, certainly not on offense, but you know, the defensive unit of Iowa is better than any either unit on Rutgers. So I kind of see some points, man. Like, sorry, we make fun of Brian Ferentz, but Jay Johnson, like, he got outscored by Brian Ferentz. So until further notice, Jay, you are Brian Ferentz's bitch.
Yeah. I mean, you let him score more than 25, man.
Dude, I don't know what to tell you. Like, so I don't know. Maybe Caden, this is it. The time is now, buddy. We are ready. This is a university and fan base that is very, very hungry for something good. And it could happen this Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is it. This is your chance, guys. If you want to give yourself legitimately something to continue playing for this season, aside from personal interests and good tape, it's got to start this weekend.
I think they get it done. Anything else, Austin?
Basketball season's almost here, John.
Oh, we will have a preview soon.
Yes, indeed. That's what I'm excited about.
Me too. I can't wait.
Yeah.
All right, man.
That's all I got. All right, guys. As always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next time.
Boop.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.